Eli Manning goes 4-0 on his first possession as a New York Giants starting quarterback. Daniel Jones is perfect and leads the team to a touchdown in his only possession as a rookie quarterback. Sam Darnold takes the Jets offense, starting offense against the Giants starting defense, marches him right down the field and scores a touchdown. There's signs of things to come, listeners, with these New York football teams, as the New York Giants defense makes me as nervous as a victim in a Scream movie. Let's get the damn show started.
Listen, when Lloyd A. Thompson and Mad Mike grab mics, it's real sports, real talk, on the field or on the court. If it happened in New York, it's covered like a blanket, dog. Interviews are ill, simply up close and personal. Batter up, Lloyd's batting first, set the tone. Mike's either at the stadium or the garden on the phone. Here we go, Giants and Jets, Yankees and Mets, Knicks and Nets. This is only an intro, the show is next.
Hey, yo, B! And please, pardon my French, as we bring you all new episode of Lloyd A. Thompson and Mad Mike Sports Talk Show. Listeners, today is Monday, August 12th, 2019, and this show airs every Monday from 1 p.m. to 2 p.m. on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Stitcher, CastBox, TuneIn, Google Play, Pocket Cast. Be sure to hit that subscribe button so you won't miss a damn thing. You can also catch previous tapings of the show. And we're also on social media, listeners. Lloyd A. Thompson, one word, Instagram. Lloyd A. Thompson, one word, Twitter. LLOYD. Be sure to hit that follow button. And if you got any questions that you'd like for me and the Mad Mike to answer on future shows, you can always shoot them through email to lloyd@pardonmyfresh.com, or you can send them directly to the website. Another great show for you today, listeners, as we're going to talk some Rich Paul nonsense as the NCAA has come out with some new rules and regulations that agents have to follow. We're going to touch up on that as well. We're going to talk some NFL preseason football as the preseason kicked off, and we're going to talk some New York Giants, some New York Jets, some other football news as well. We're going to talk some Mets. We're going to talk some Yankees as the Yankees dealing with a boatload of injuries, and the Mets are inching their way back into the playoffs, listeners. So it's always listeners. Just buckle up, sit back and relax, and start spreading the news. Hey, yo! Let's get it!
How sweet it is. It's Monday. That means the Lloyd A. Thompson and Mad Mike Sports Show is back. Let's go.
Listeners, before we get into the show, Mad Mike won't be with us again for the second week, but at least this time, we know where the Mad Mike is. Mad Mike is away vacationing. I hope Mad Mike is having a great time. He'll be back next week. Mad Mike, please don't get gobbled up by no crocodiles while you're away, brother, and come back with a nice suntan for your boy, LT. With that being said, listeners, we're going to start the show off talking about Rich Paul. Rich Paul, for those who don't know, is the agent for LeBron James and some of the other great players in the NBA, Anthony Davis, and some other players, all right? The NCAA implemented a rule which has been known as the Rich Paul rule, and this rule seems to target agents, but some say that college players will be hurt the most by this rule. So let me break it down for you. Let me get you caught up to speed on what exactly I'm talking about, all right? News broke this week that the NCAA is tightening its certification guidelines for those seeking to represent college athletes. All right, talking about agents. All right, the immediate backlash was fierce from the NCAA doing this. And by the very nickname it was given, it's focusing on agents. Okay, and here's why it's focusing on agents. And LeBron James, the great LeBron James, he was the one that dubbed it as the Rich Paul rule on Twitter. All right, in honor of the super agent who represents him and several other top NBA stars. Okay. But would not meet the new requirements. He wouldn't meet the new requirements because he doesn't possess a college degree. All right, so the backlash is that the NCAA is coming out with this because he doesn't possess a possess a college degree. All right? Still moving forward, listeners. All right? Many agents and college basketball analysts agree that these regulations, which the NCAA are said to, are intended to ensure players receive experienced counsel for all going to college eligibility. All right? It seems intended to lessen the influence of Rich Paul and other younger agents. Lil Wayne has an agency. Master P has an agency. All right? And many of those guys, if you don't know, are African-American. All right? But critics of the new rules say their concerns go deeper than that. All right? That the NCAA is making it riskier for athletes to explore a career in pro basketball. Okay, and if the quote-unquote student-athlete wants to test the waters, let them test the waters. Don't put a toast in their hands. All right, Jay Bilas, he's a great college basketball analyst. He was saying in an interview that what the NCAA is doing here is putting up barriers to make it more difficult for the asset of the university to leave, which is the basketball player, all right? That's why they're doing it. And it's funny how the burden is disproportionately on football and basketball. The burden is disproportionately on men, and the burden is disproportionately on African-American men, all right? He also says that the new rule spells out in a memo sent to agents on Monday, it dictates that anyone seeking to represent a college player must meet three criterias. All right? The agent must pass an in-person exam taken in November at the NCAA offices in Indianapolis. He must be certified by the NBA Players Association for at least 3 years and must have a bachelor's degree. And these changes come less than a year after the NCAA released eligibility rules for college basketball players, allowing them to enter the draft and consult with agents while retaining the option to return to college. That move made in response to the recommendation by Condoleezza Rice-led Commission on College Basketball created in response to widespread corruption in the sport, all right? Was well received as an overdue acknowledgement of the hype of player advisor relationships that had long existed before that board. All right, but listeners, the Commission on Basketball also recommended the NCAA certification process for agents to be more stringent. Okay, and after the added layer of requirements became known, the NCAA released a statement on Wednesday. And this is what the NCAA said. It said, although some can have been successful without a college degree as a higher education organization, the NCAA values a college education and continues to emphasize the importance of earning a degree. While different and distinct, and our rules taken together with the National Basketball Players Association, which is the manner they were meant to be examined, provide a clear opportunity for our student athletes to receive excellent advice from knowledgeable professionals on either the college or professional path they choose. The negative reaction is understandable from agents who, after all, are vying for the chance to represent these players, but agents and outside observers said that the new rules also hinders players by restricting the flow of information they may receive. Okay? Allowing only those who meet the NCAA new criteria excludes significant segments of the agent pool, no matter how good they are at their jobs. See where I'm going with this? And not just those without a bachelor's degree, but also any up-and-coming agents who haven't been National Basketball Player Association certified for 3 years. That's going to knock a lot of people off the branch, listeners. It also excludes those agents trying to break into an industry that's predominantly white and predominantly male-driven. Now, I'm not trying to turn this into a race war. I'm calling a spade. Just think or just listen and think about to what I've dished out to you right now, listeners. Look at the criteria that's given now for agents to represent players. Bachelor's degree. Certification for 3 years. Like I said, there's a lot of up-and-coming agents. Again, Rich Paul, Master P, Lil Wayne, to name a few. And these young men are knocking the quote-unquote white agent off the branch. Because now NBA stars and college kids are signing with these guys more so than white agents, which was the norm back in the day. Now that's not the case. And you also have players leaving agents that they've had for quite some time to go to these new agents, the Rich Pauls, the Lil Waynes, the Master P's. And there's a couple of other agents also that's up and coming. You know, the NCAA is, so to speak, raining on the parade. All right, now, there's an agent by the name of Daryl Connor who represents Los Angeles Clippers' James Palmer and the Washington Wizards' Chason Randle. All right? And he was quoted as saying this, listeners, "I don't see how this benefits players because you're limiting their options," Connor said. "Every young man that makes the decision to test the waters and potentially leave college should have the ability to meet with all the prospective agents they feel will be best suited for the job. Truth be told," he said, "a two-year agent who may work at a firm where they gained experience or even built a relationship with this young man versus someone who may not even know the kid, they may have 20 years of relevant experience. Both of those perspectives could benefit the athlete." And it's not just any athlete the NCAA is restricting. According to Connor and others, such as Jason Gluten, who represents Al Horford of the Philadelphia 76ers, the NCAA rules don't extend to baseball or hockey, where players can be drafted and return to college without any type of penalty, no matter whom they consult with. And he was also quoted as saying, "The NCAA seems to be targeting the NBA and NBA agents, given other sports, such as Major League Baseball or the National Hockey League, are not required to complete the same guidelines for doing the same duties of advising and representing their respective student athletes." The regulations only apply to basketball. The only revenue sport the NCAA has complete control over. Again, listeners, doesn't apply to hockey, doesn't apply to baseball, only applies to basketball. And NCAA basketball rakes in more money than NCAA baseball and NCAA hockey. That's a damn fact. The only NCAA sport that probably pulls in more money is football. And Jay Bowers also noted that NCAA has less power over college football because conferences and universities control much of the revenue. Important information I'm giving you, listeners. Universities and conferences control much of the revenue, all right? And there's also an element of race that Ballas said can't be ignored. All right, this is coming from Jay Ballas. He said 56% of Division I men's college basketball players are black. And that's according to NCAA's data. Plus, in addition, to career barriers being put up to their younger cohorts, some agents also see the new regulations as a simple money grab by the NCAA, which will charge, all right? Listen this. The NCAA is going to charge $250 for an application fee and $1,250 and a $1,250 certification fee to complete the process. So when it's all said and done, that's $1,500 to do what you need to do to complete the process to become an agent. And as for the scope of this, of the new relegations, many say little will actually, you know, change. College players will continue to test the waters with potentially greater risk to their eligibility. Well-established agents such as Rich Paul won't be affected. And many agents they'll find loopholes. I think the agents will find loopholes in this. We'll see what happens. And Jay Bowers is saying that what bothers him more so than anything else is the NCAA is purporting to protect players. Jay Bowers, again, I'm sorry to quote him so much, but I'm going to do so again because he's spitting knowledge. He was saying, Jay Bowers was quoted as saying, look, none of this is sinister. It's just misguided. The NCAA is in no position to protect the players in this regard. There's no ethic requirements here. A college degree doesn't mean that you're ethical. One of the agents that was at the center of this entire thing, the FBI investigation, was Andy Miller. And he's got an undergraduate degree, so what? The NCAA, what do they gain from this? They don't protect anyone. And they just look bad. You think after looking bad in so many different instances, someone would say, hey, why don't we not do this? It's not a good look for the NCAA, baby. It's not a good look. And this has received so much criticism, so much backlash, that the NCAA at some point responded to criticism over that. And I think that the NCAA ran headfirst into a PR nightmare this week. This is a PR nightmare. When word leaked out and more stringent agent certification process that requires those seeking to represent student athletes. They issued a response on Wednesday and then an updated response on Thursday, loosely acknowledging the new changes to the agent certification process and defending this stance by citing gathered insight from the Condoleezza Rice-led Commission on College Basketball. Hence, the NCAA statement with the updated... Here's a statement from the NCAA, basically. All right. This is from the NCAA, quoted from the NCAA. Although some can have been successful without a college degree, it's a higher education organization NCAA values a college education and continues to emphasize the importance of earning a degree. We are guided by recommendations from the Commission on College Basketball, which spoke with the agent and advisor community that the NCAA certification process should be more stringent than current processes. With this in mind, we benchmarked our new rules against the requirements for other organizations that certify agents, like the National Basketball Players Association, which also requires agents to have a bachelor's degree. We recognize others provide discretionary waivers to the degree requirement. And while different and distinct, our rules taken together, which is the manner they were meant to be examined, provide a clear opportunity for our student athletes to receive excellent advice from knowledgeable professionals on either the college or professional path they choose. Let me break it down for you listeners some more. Basketball, outside of football, because football, remember, you can't enter the draft until your junior year. So you have to do at least two years of college before you can become draft eligible in football. Most young men, and I like that football does this, most young men, some of them stay in college and they come out as a senior and end up getting their degree. I was never a big fan of the NCAA allowing basketball players to come out after 1 year or not even come in to the NBA at all and come out straight out of high school. Then they went from coming straight out of high school to you having to do 1 year. What's going to happen is those young men that come out of college, those young men that come out after 1 year, most of them are not going to go back to college and get their college degree. So who's hurting who? If the NCAA is making all these stringent rules for agents, why don't they make stringent rules for the college athletes? That you have to do 2 years in school and you can't have eligibility until your junior year. Why not? If education is so important to them, as they so speak, this is what they should implement, because most kids might just stay in school and finish up and get their degree. It's a hard life. And most of these young men, when things don't work out in basketball, they're not prepared to be successful in life. And if that's what the NCAA is portraying themselves to be so concerned about, why are they still allowing these young men to enter the college draft after 1 year of basketball? Why not just make them do 2 years and then allow them to decide when they become a junior? Because the only thing that's keeping these young men in college is if they don't have a high draft stock after their first year. And then they'll stay in, and if they get a higher draft stock after their second year, guess what's happening? They're coming out after their second year. Most young men in NCAA basketball that do 4 years are doing 4 years because they didn't have really good freshman and sophomore seasons. Had an okay junior season and a better senior season, and voila. There, hence, there's your diploma, there's your graduate, you know. And you got a chance to get drafted, but at least you have a diploma. But that shouldn't be how it all pans out for these young men. The NCAA needs to, if they're going to focus and if their main concern is what's best for these student athletes, and that's getting a quality education and becoming successful in life, make them stay in school for 2 years. Put that rule out instead of attacking young black agents, young black up-and-coming agents. Make these young men stay in school. That's what they should be focusing on. Because there's nothing broken about what's going on with NBA agents. There's nothing broken. What's happening, again, is that these African-American men, young African-American men, are choosing to go with young African-American agents that they're fans of. Now, Rich Paul is not a rapper, but his biggest client is LeBron James. Okay, Jay-Z is another one. I don't know how I miss Jay-Z. Let's throw Jay-Z into the equation. A lot of these young kids, this is what they grow up listening to. This is what they grow up. These are people that they want to meet when they grow up. And they see how much money that Jay-Z, Lil Wayne, Master P, they see how much money these guys are pulling in. And who would you want to represent you when it comes to that? You see Jay-Z, who's a billionaire now. If Jay-Z comes to you, somebody who's a rap icon and is a billionaire, and he says, hey, Lloyd, I want to represent you when you come out of college as your agent, who am I going to pick? Who do you think I'm going to pick? And that just drives the NCAA nuts. That drives the overall landscape of agents nuts. They don't want that. Because these young African-American men are taking food off of their table. And I'm sure at some point they've gone to the NCAA and complained about it over and over again. And the NCAA has turned around and said, it's just a theory of mine, a conspiracy theory of mine. And NCAA has turned around and said, okay, we got you. This is what we're going to do. Bam. Bam. All right, listen. A higher education, you know, organization standing by these young men, okay? It doesn't exactly withstand the test of reason at all. It doesn't. Having a bachelor's degree doesn't guarantee that an individual is any less sketchy or reliable in terms of representing student athletes. You only have to look as far as the latest college basketball scandal that went down. And even amidst the backlash, though, the NCAA says it's standing by its changes, citing the betterment of the student athlete experience. Make them stay in school then. You're going after the wrong people. But listeners, you can see why. You can see why they're going after the people that they're going after. Young, influential African-American agents are signing all these African-American ball players. At least basketball. It's not the case with football, not the case with baseball, not the case with hockey. Only the case with basketball, which is predominantly an African-American sport. All right, football is not predominantly African-American. Neither is baseball, and definitely not hockey. So you see where I'm coming from, where I say this seems a little fishy. And again, I hate to play the race card because it can become such a delicate thing to talk about. I'm just trying to put it out there, listeners, so you can see why I feel the way that I feel. And we're all entitled to our opinions, as I am to mine. And this is just my opinion on a situation that the NCAA is screwing up. Again, I just think that they're going after the wrong people when it's all said and done. If your main concern is these young men and them getting the possible best experience, college experience that they can get, make them stay in school and get a degree, because that's the most important thing. That's the best thing you could do for these young men. All right? And if you're good after 2 years of basketball, after a year of basketball, coming out of high school, and they want you in year one, unless you hurt yourself, God forbid, any of these young men suffer injury, guess what's going to happen? They're going to want you when you're done with a degree. Can't nobody take that away from anyone. Nobody can take a degree away from you. And like I said, what happens, a lot of these young men, if they sink in the NBA and they don't make that money, or they get cut, or they don't make a team, a lot of these young men in a tough spot, listeners, they are. They're in a tough spot because now they have to go out and prepare for life, a life that they wasn't really prepared to deal with because of the NCAA. So is the NCAA's best interest these young men's well-being when they're charging $1,500 for an individual to become an agent? Imagine, you know how many people are trying to become agents? I'm sure thousands that we don't even know about. And it's just a matter of getting, there's so many different types of basketball players. Listen, basketball is not a sport like it is, you know, with baseball where, you know, you have single A, double A, triple A, all that other kind of stuff. I have to do my homework on this list. I don't even know if there's any African-American baseball agents. At least the high-profile ones are not African-American. I know that much. I would even push for Rich Paul to represent baseball players. He might have one or two that I don't know of. I have to look that up and see. But I guarantee you, if he does have any, it'll be most likely African-American players, which is becoming extinct in Major League Baseball. But that's another topic in itself. I had to touch up on this, listeners, because this is going to be interesting to see how things are handled moving forward. Again, it doesn't affect Rich Paul because he already has his foot in the door. It's up-and-coming individuals that want to become agents that has to go through this. So it's going to be interesting to see. We may touch up on this some more. We may not touch up on this some more, depending on what happens. But that's what's going down with that. We're going to take a quick commercial break. And when we come back, we're going to talk some football as the New York Jets had a preseason game against the New York Giants. And we're going to talk some baseball as the Yankees are trying to get back some healthy players, and the New York Mets, listeners, are vying for a wild card playoff spot. We'll be right back with more of the Lloyd A. Thompson and Mad Mike Sports Talk Show. Welcome back to the Lloyd A. Thompson and Mad Mike Sports Talk Show. Listeners, before we begin the second half of the show, again, Mad Mike is away vacationing. Hope he's having a great time. Mad Mike, please don't be stingy. Bring me back a souvenir or something, and if you don't, I'm going to call you out on it on next week's show. Yeah, damn right I am. But let's talk some NFL football, listeners. Week one of the preseason is in the books. All right, giving NFL fans a taste of football returning to a weekly spectacle on the calendar. Yes, I was looking forward to it. I'm sure football fans was looking forward to it. And whether the NFL actually needs 4 weeks of preseason football, that's up for debate. There was talks about them shortening the preseason. All right, and that will be discussed in the latest round of the collective bargaining negotiation, listeners. The first week of the preseason, it all provides an opportunity for first-year players to make a mark in the NFL. And there's always feel-good stories of long-shot players throughout the league. This is an opportunity for you to see guys who didn't get shots or get tryouts or didn't perform at the NFL Combine, wasn't invited to the NFL Combine. Feel-good stories. All right, in the first week in NFL provided some interesting stories giving teams an early start of the direction they're going to go with assembling their 53-man rosters. Okay, and which players could crack the starting lineup with the regular season being less than a month away, all right? And I just want to start off, listeners, because I was one that was very upset when this team drafted this player, A lot of New York Giant fans was upset when the team drafted this player. And I know it's only one game. I get it. But the Daniel Jones hype train has left the station, listeners. It's left the station. All right? The New York Giants probably could have selected Jones with their second first-round pick at number 17 overall. Instead, they decided to take him with the number 6 overall pick, making him the heir apparent to Eli Manning, all right? And the pick was controversial at the time, as the Giants and Daniel Jones, unfair to him, was criticized, ridiculed, and questioned for that selection. I remember Mel Kiper when they drafted him. I remember him going on different shows and saying that he actually liked the pick and it actually made sense to him. And he was saying that if this is the Giants, if this is the player that the Giants coveted and this is who they wanted to pick and they felt that he wouldn't be there at number 17, then you take him at number 6. All right, and for at least the first week of the preseason, the Giants can laugh at the doubters. All right? Daniel Jones had an impressive first drive in a Giants uniform. He went 5 for 5 for 67 yards and a touchdown. A 12-yard touchdown pass to Benny Fowler in the first quarter, capping an 8-play, 73-yard drive that had Giant fans excited about the future. He read the field well, listeners. He made excellent throws. He stood tall in the pocket. And that new Giants offensive line protected him, which we're going to talk some more individually about the Giants and Jets. All right. All Jones' performance did was increase the speculation of when he'll supplant Eli Manning as the starting quarterback, who looked a little shaky. I mean, they did call a draw play. I think they called 2 running plays, and he had a rollout pass play that went for 3 yards. You know, they didn't have him throw the ball down the field too much. I don't know if it was because they didn't want him to get hit, whatever the case may be. But his offensive series, or the play calling for Eli Manning's possession, was a lot different than the play calling for Daniel Jones' possession. Why that was, I don't know. But there's 3 more weeks of preseason, but week 1 appears to be more realistic after his debut. Now let's talk about the other rookie quarterback, and while Daniel Jones' debut was a highlight of the weekend, there were a few other first-round quarterbacks making their debuts, including number 1 overall pick in the draft, Kyler Murray, who is the unquestioned starter for the Arizona Cardinals. All right? This young man used his legs to have an efficient night. He went 6 for 7 for 44 yards, and Murray spreaded the ball and got rid of it quickly. And even though the Cardinals failed to get past midfield when he was in, he looked really good. My thing is, you know, Kyler Murray is a short quarterback, so he has to utilize his lanes as he steps back in the pocket. But believe it or not, he stood tall in the pocket, had confidence, threw some very good passes. He could possibly be a solid NFL quarterback for years to come. All right? Let's talk about Dwayne Haskins, the young man that said everybody was going to feel sorry for not choosing him. I guess that was a direct punch gut, a punch to the gut at the New York Giants. He also made his debut for the Washington Redskins. And he showed he's not ready to start just yet. And again, it's only week 1. He could turn around and have a great week 2, week 3, week 4. Daniel Jones could turn around and have an awful week 2, week 3, week 4. Same thing with Kyler Murray. It's just week 1. And that's all I'm basing this off of is week 1's performance, listeners. But the Redskins have plenty of other problems, mostly their offensive line. Oh, my gosh, that their offensive line looked terrible. And that also factored into Hankins' decision-making. Hankins finished 8 of 14 for 117 yards, two interceptions, one of which was returned for a touchdown, and he can sling the ball. He can definitely sling the ball. Definitely sling the ball. But the Redskins are rushing him to be the starter. They have Colt McCoy, who didn't play in the preseason opener. They have Case Keenum. And those two are likely the battle for the starting quarterback job. I do have a feeling at some point, Dwayne Haskins will be the starting quarterback at some point during this regular season. I mean, I really can't see Colt McCoy leading the Redskins to a Super Bowl. I can't see Case Keenum leading the Redskins to a Super Bowl. So at some point, I do think Dwayne Haskins will be thrown into the fire to see if he can handle being a starting NFL quarterback. I also want to acknowledge that the Kansas City Chiefs may have a new running back. All right, head coach Andy Reid, he said that the team is going to a running back by committee approach this season. One, which may be influenced by the play of rookie running back Darwin Thompson. No relation, listeners. Okay? I don't even know who the hell Darwin Thompson is. I'm sure most of you don't know who the hell Darwin Thompson is. 5'8", 185, pound running back. And he was a sixth-round pick out of Utah State. And he literally showed the Chiefs, and I watched this game, he showed me the added dimension he brings to their offense. Now, we all know what happened to the Chiefs starting running back. He was caught on camera striking a young lady. He got released from the Chiefs and signed with the Cleveland Browns. So he needs to be replaced. And Thompson, he had 5 carries for 22 yards and a 26-yard touchdown reception in which he showcased his speed to find an end zone. And Thompson was the number 3 running back Saturday night entering the game. Earlier than expected, the number 1 running back, Damian Williams, sat out the opener with an injury. And we all talk about how injuries, they're so unfortunate, but they could be so beneficial to other players, especially people trying to make up the 53-man roster. And this is a case in point right here. And I still think that Thompson will be behind Williams. And they also have Carlos Hyde. So I think he'll be behind Darren Williams and Carlos Hyde on the depth chart. But more touches may be coming his way in the next few weeks. And here's my take on America's team, which is quote-unquote the Dallas Cowboys. This organization needs Ezekiel Elliott in the worst way. And Ezekiel Elliott is currently sitting out as he wants a new contract. And Jerry Jones and his son have come out and criticized him and said, you know, things like Alfred Morris could do the job. And kind of diminishing Ezekiel Elliott on this team. And Ezekiel Elliott is standing ground. He's holding his ground with this. And this isn't an overreaction to one preseason game where the first team plays a few series, but running backs that did play for the Cowboys, they weren't impressive at all, listeners. Dallas had 18 carries for 55 yards in their preseason opener against the San Francisco Giants. That's an average of 3.1 yards per carry. The Cowboys' first-team offense played the entire first series, giving rookie running back Tony Pollard the first crack at filling in for Elliott. Pollard, for those who don't know, he's a fourth-round pick out of Memphis. He had 4 carries for 16 yards. He did have a nice 4-yard gain on 3rd-and-2. And he's also had a nice camp for the Dallas Cowboys. Then you have 7th-round pick Mike Weber out of Ohio State. Now, I watched him quite a bit in college. He had 6 carries for 18 yards entering the game on the second series. Then Dallas also has another running back in camp by the name of Darius Jackson. He has 6 carries for 16 yards later in the game. But Pollard is a front runner to receive regular carries if Elliott's holdout continues into the season. I mentioned Alfred Morris, who Dallas signed. And Alfred Morris will probably split carries with Pollard in the preseason. So we'll see what happens. Is there trouble in Oakland? All right, and early in Oakland camp, Raiders head coach John Gruden raised some eyebrows on the battle quarterback Nathan Peterman. And he said Nathan Peterman is growing on him. Could this mean the end of Davis Carr tenure? All right, Peterman is battling for the number 2 quarterback job against Mike Glennon, who finished 7-25 for 200 yards and 2 interceptions after week 1. The Raiders may give Peterman a second team snaps going forward. We'll see what happens. There's also questions if Derek Carr fits the type of quarterback that Antonio Brown needs to be successful. The Chicago Bears kicking saga has dragged on into the preseason. Let's see who will be the last kicker standing. They have Eddie Pinheiro and Elliott Fry as the final 2 candidates. Last kicker standing for Chicago. We'll see what happens. But if kicking is one of your biggest concerns, you're in good shape. Now, here's a feel-good story, listeners, before we move on to the Jets and Giants. Here's a feel-good story. A rugby player made the most of the lone carry he had, and it was something special to show the importance of what team sports does or how much of an impact it has on individuals. All right, a young man by the name of Christian Wade. He's a former English rugby star. He was signed by the Buffalo Bills the offseason. He had 1 carry, okay, for the Bills in their 24-16 preseason victory over the Colts, and it was a 65-yard touchdown run in the fourth quarter that showed he could be a viable asset to Buffalo's backfield. Will he make the team? It's a long shot, but I tell you what, though, listeners, when he scored that touchdown, he was mobbed by his teammates. Mobbed by his teammates. And he earned the opportunity, you know, to compete in the NFL through the league's international pathway program. And this young man is a long shot to make the Bills roster at running back. But he's 3rd in the NFL in rushing after the first week of the preseason. I know. I'm just putting that out there. All this means is that hopefully that run earned them some more snaps to get an opportunity to make the Buffalo Bills roster, all right? Now, let's talk about the New York Jets, listeners. Okay, they lost to the New York Giants 31-22 on Thursday. And it's just a preseason game. Very impressed with the Jets' first-string offense as they marched right down the field on a Giants' first-string defense and scored a touchdown. But it didn't give fans either side a lot of time to settle in and watch their starters do battle because it was so quick. Normally, the Jets and Giants play the 3rd game of the preseason, which is usually the game where starters get the bulk of playing time. But they moved it up from his usual 3rd slot in the summer and put it as the opener. And the starters who did play were back on the sidelines after a series of 2. But still a Jets 31-22 loss to the Giants in the team's 51st preseason meeting has some memorable moments. Sam Darnold supplied some, you know, on his first and only drive to the Jets 6-0 lead before raindrops and lightning arrived at Giant Stadium, causing an hour delay. Looks sharp. He looks sharp. I just want to point out that wide receiver Josh Bellamy had a big series. You know, he had a pitch and catch with quarterback Trevor Siemian, who's battling for the backup spot in the second quarter. Bellamy had a 16-yard reception on second and eight, drew a 26-yard pass interference penalty on rookie quarterback DeAndre Baker on third down, then added a falling forward 10-yard grab on third and eight to the Giants 16. And his hands helped set up Elijah McGuire's mitts as a third-year running back snagged Simeon's fourth and one toss out in the open and tumbled into the end zone for a 7-yard touchdown, and it just sliced the Giants' second quarter lead to 14-12. This is important. This is an important aspect of football, listeners. And that's prying the ball loose. And the Jets' backup defenders showed that Greg Williams' scheme and coaching is making a big impression if this is coming up from your backup defenders. One turnover play didn't count. Alex Tanny was ruled to have fumbled under pressure, which he was. His arm was moving forward. And that was from defensive lineman Bronson Confusi. And Parry Nickerson picking up the ball, taking it to the end zone. The touchdown was overturned. The referees, I don't know how they botched that, but I guess if a touchdown is scored, it gets automatically reviewed anyways. But that play could have possibly been a great example of Williams coaching and his players to pick up any ball that hits the ground and advance it just in case it's an actual turnover. The Giants player stood there. They assumed it was a forward pass. No whistle was blown. And no Giant was nowhere near the ball. All the defenders, he picked it up and scampered into the end zone. But I thought that the real turnover came shortly after the reverse takeaway, when linebacker Frankie Louva dropped the hammer from behind on running back Paul Perkins. Never give up on a play. Didn't give up on a play. And that forced a fumble that was recovered at the Giants 13. And Chandler Catanzaro, who had missed two extra points, succeeded in suing. You know, he kicked a 34-yard field goal with 1:41 left in the first half, putting the Jets back into the lead at 15-14. The Jets might have a kicking problem on their hand, listeners. And speaking of kicking, while Catanzaro struggled and missed a couple field goals, excuse me, it's going to be interesting to see how Mad Mike feels about this. Punters Lachlan Edwards and Matt Dar soared. You know, Edwards is the incumbent punter. You know, he drilled three punts for a gross of 52.3 yards and a net of 50.3. And he had two inside the 20. And Dahl kicked for Miami in the 2015-2016 season and for the Buffalo Bills for five games last year, had a 43.5 yard gross on two punts. Both were inside the 20. And let's also point out that Greg Dort showed some ability on punt returns, especially on a 32-yard return in the third quarter. As well, you know, he had four receptions also to go along with that. The final, a two-yarder from Luke Falk for the Jets' final touchdown of the night with 14 seconds left to play. Very impressed with the Jets' starting offense. Very impressed with the Jets' starting defense. I do think that this team could be a playoff team. I do. I do. It seems like the players are buying into whatever Adam Gase is doing. They're buying into Greg Williams' system. And once that happens, that's only beneficial. That only makes you stronger when the players believe in a system that they're playing in. That helps. But let's move on to the New York Football Giants. And we all know that something wild or memorable always happens when the Giants and Jets get together in the preseason. And this time it was Mother Nature. An hour, lightning, and torrential downpours. An hour's worth of that. Obviously, football is a sport that's played in the rain. But once you get that lightning, that puts everything to a halt. And I was sandwiched between some promising football from the Giants youngsters. I spoke about Daniel Jones. I love linebacker Ryan Connolly. He had an excellent game. And cornerback Corey Ballantyne played well also. But there was some concerning play, listeners. And again, it was only one series from quarterback Eli Manning, Riley Dixon, and running back Paul Perkins, who's on the bubble. He didn't help his cause with the game he had on Thursday, listeners. Dropped a few passes, fumbled. He did well on picking up blitzes. That's the one thing he did do really well. But he has to pick it up, or else he can very well be in danger of not making this 53-man roster. This Giants offense, man, they begin, you know, with the three and out. And I was like, oh boy, here we go. Three and out. Jets marched down the field. Giants came in three and out. And that was led by Eli Manning. He did hit a short pass, but then Manning missed a wide open Rhett Ellison down the field instead of choosing to dump off to tight end Scott Simonson for a 2-yard gain. That was all on the same play, listeners. Is Eli Manning comfortable throwing the ball 2 to 5 yards, 2 to 10 yards? Man, Mike he's voiced this in the past. And Manning wasn't really under pressure on that play. So how he missed that play that was right in front of him is a head scratcher. Like I said, maybe he just feels comfortable throwing 2 to 10 yard passes at this point in his career. Got to throw the ball down the field, man. Got to. That offensive line looked really good. Looked really good as far as protecting Daniel Jones and Eli Manning. They ran the ball much better on their second possession, but that was against the Jets' second-string defense. Now, let me tell you something. The Giants' starting defense needs to sharpen up its pass coverage angles. Boy, oh boy, did they seem lost. And on a Jets opening possession, quarterback Sam Darnold completed passes. And the Jets picked up yards at 32, 28, 8 yards. A 3-yard touchdown completion. Each one of those completions was a result of poor angles taken by Giants defenders. One was by Jabril Peppers. One was by Tate Davis, inside linebacker Tate Davis. And a 3-yard touchdown reception by Jamison Crowder was against rookie Julian Love, who was picked on the play. He was picked on the play. But like Carl Banks said, you can't go under the pick. It's the same thing with basketball. When you go under the pick, you're giving a shooter a chance to hit the three. When you go over the pick, it makes it tougher for him to shoot the three. And I played a little bit of corner in high school, semi-pro football. Situation like that, run into the receiver. The receiver might get called for offensive pass interference or pick. So run into him. Going behind two defenders is tough. It's tough. And after all this talk about Dexter Lawrence II being an every down player, the Giants coaches took him off the field on third down and replaced him with B.J. Hill and Olsen Pierre. He's not an edge rusher. He doesn't fit. He doesn't fit the scheme, the 3-4 scheme that the Giants are running. He fits a 4-3. He fits a 4-3. And the Giants play mostly in a 4-3 defensive front. But it sure would have been nice to see Lawrence if he could have collapsed the pocket on passing downs. He did some great jobs in gobbling up double teams that allowed the linebackers to come up and make tackles. He did that really well. And back to Sam Darnold, all right? In his home series, he went 4-for-5 for 68 yards and one touchdown. And he had a lot of time to throw the damn ball. A lot of time to throw the ball. He averaged 17 yards per completion. He drove the Jets right down the damn field. 7 plays, 75 yards. And he had all the time in the damn world to throw the ball. All the time in the world. And the Giants were stuck with 3- and 4-man rushes. They didn't blitz. If they did, it wasn't successful. Their defense is a mess, man. It is. It is. A mess. I touched up on rookie quarterback Daniel Jones. Impressive. 5-for-5, 57 yards. 12-yard touchdown pass to Benny Fowler. On the drive, Jones, he worked from the shotgun 3 times and under center twice. So that's sort of a balance as far as taking snaps from under the center and taking snaps from the shotgun formation. In all 5 of his pass attempts, saw Jones make a single read, which means that the ball came out of his hands quickly. Didn't need to scan the field much. He did an excellent job with his reads and the velocity on his passes with the ball and the placement of the ball. Didn't leave anybody out to dry. He also did a nice job on one of his throws of freezing a cornerback, which gave receiver Cody Lattimore a chance to separate on a crossing route, which also kept the flat open. All right, now here's another feel-good story, all right? I gave you one from the Buffalo Bills. Let's talk about Nick Gates, a college tackle who was better suited for guard at the NFL level. He had a rough night filling in at offensive tackle. He committed 2 holding penalties and had a false start. Ain't too much feel good about that, huh? That's called cut good. He also had a few whiffs because he was playing too high and allowed the man to get underneath him. Wasn't a good night for Paul Perkins, listeners. He finished with 9 yards on 4 carries. Dropped a couple passes. Lost a fumble. He didn't run very well. Show very little change of direction and ability to drop his head and run through traffic and get into traffic. Doesn't bowl well in this competition with Wayne Gallman for the number 2 spot behind Saquon Barkley. Here's my New York Giant favorite player right now at this particular point in time. Ryan Connolly linebacker from Wisconsin, had a solid night. He made 5 tackles on defense, 4 solo, each one limiting the ball carry from breaking too far into the second level. Remember, with linebackers, it's not really how many tackles they get, it's how much yardage they allow. And one thing Wisconsin has always had outside of running backs is some damn good linebackers. Damn good linebackers. And Corey Ballantyne, he had a good game. Ballantyne made a gorgeous, he had a gorgeous interception toward the end of the third quarter. Third quarter on former Giants quarterback Davis Webb. Might be some DeAndre Baker supposedly is having some x-rays done on his knee. Not a good sign. But maybe this will give Corey Ballantyne the opportunity to step up and earn a starting quarterback job opposite of Jack Rabbit. Just want to go down the injury report as I mentioned DeAndre Baker. They didn't play 2 receivers, Amber Edetua, hamstring, Britton Golden growing, Darius Slayton hamstring, Sterling Shepard thumb. Cornerback Sam Bill got to get on the field. He's dealing with a hamstring injury. Antonio Hamilton growing, Grant Haley shoulder, offensive tackles Chad Wheeler back. Brian Malik had a burner. George Asafo Ajayu concussion, outside linebacker. Avery Moss, hip flexor. Saquon Barkley and Evan Engram then touched the field. Healthy scratches. Running back John Hillman suffered a concussion midway through the fourth quarter of the game. And Wayne Goldman had his ankle rolled up. X-rays were negative. Keep you posted on a DeAndre Baker injury. He looked pretty good, listeners. He looked pretty good. I was impressed. But before we close the show out, listeners, we gotta talk some baseball, all right? Gotta talk some baseball. The Mets, the New York Mets, have won 15 of 16 games and are on a best roll since a 16-1 stint. In 1990, they pulled within a game and a half of the Washington Nationals going into yesterday's game. Okay, for the wild card spot, they're back in it. We're talking about a team that was a laughing stock of baseball. Terrible bullpen. These guys are back in it. Everybody wrote them off, including myself. I've watched countless shows, SNY, Mets don't stand a chance, Mets don't stand a chance, the Mets don't stand a chance. I want to see what these guys have to say now about this baseball team who's back in the hunt. Still a lot of baseball left. And that pitching staff just got so much better with Marcus Stroman. So much better. It's not been the Mets pitching staff, it's been their bullpen. Who's blown over 20, who's gave up the lead in 20-some games. So you talk about, what if those 20 games, let's just cut it down to 10. All right? Let's just say they don't give up the lead in 20 games, 20-plus games. They give it up in 10. Mets in the playoffs right now, listeners. They're in the playoffs. Shea Stadium is live again. The Mets also, they hit multiple homers in 8 consecutive games. And that broke a franchise record set this June. Beat some pretty good pitchers. Strasburg pitched well. They had the lead. The Mets came back. Corbin. Mets came back on him, so they come back on some solid pitches. Small for them to keep Noah Syndergaard. He pitched to Wilson Ramos for the first time since June 15th and threw 7 innings of 2-run ball. 5 strikeouts, 7 hits allowed. That pitching staff is scary, man. Pitching staff is scary. Got to give credit where credit is due. New York Mets are playing solid baseball. And I'm happy for this organization. Well, let me not say organization. I'm happy for the team. And I'm happy for the Mets fans. It's been a while since I've heard Mets fans get excited about Mets baseball. But they are. Good for them. See what happens. And as a sports fan and a New Yorker, I'm excited for that both New York teams are in the thick of things. Obviously, the Yankees somewhat running away with the American League East. And the Mets climbing themselves into contention for playoff baseball. Tell you what, playoff time come, if the Mets could somehow manage to get themselves into the playoffs, boy, oh boy, not going to want to face them. I still think that they have the best pitching staff in baseball overall. Still feel that way. Still feel that way. Now let's talk about the New York Yankees before we close the show out. And when this team started this season, no one would have thought, okay, or no one would have expected how this team handled an unprecedented string of injuries. Started off in spring training and continued throughout it's been going on thus far, the entire season. But with that being said, it's also provided opportunities to numerous players who probably wouldn't have had been envisioned as regulars. All in all, listeners, get this. The Yankees have had 26 players land on the injured list, serving 33 stints. That is absolutely absurd. And if Aaron Boone, win, lose, or draw, doesn't win manager of the year, Oh my gosh, what type of thievery will that be? What type of thievery will that be? Still don't like the way he handles the pitching staff as far as removing and implementing pitchers. But he has them playing good baseball. He has them playing great baseball. Not good, he has them playing great baseball. All right, but let me just break down the injury-riddled Yankees and what's their status as far as what's going on with these guys. Let's start off with Miguel Andujar. Andujar underwent season-ending surgery on May 20th to repair a partially torn labrum in his right shoulder. He hopes to resume throwing at some point in September and will continue to increase activities throughout the winter, which will allow him to be ready for spring training. Has Giovanni Ursula taken his spot at third base? Will he be a trading chip? Be interesting to see how that pans out next year. So he's expected to return next year. Dellin Betances. All right, he's expected to return late August, September. It'll be big for the Yankees to get him back. He's been throwing on a flat ground, a distance up to 90 feet as he attempts to return from a grade 1 strain of his right lat muscle, which was diagnosed by MRI on June 11th. And Betances is scheduled to throw from a mound on August 12th. Prior to the MRI, Betances has been recovering from a right shoulder impingement that was diagnosed in March and delayed his season debut. Be a big pickup if the Yankees can get Dellin Betances in that bullpen come playoff time and down the stretch. The forgotten man, Greg Bird. Anybody remember who he is? He tore his plantar fasciitis in his left foot and was placed on an injury list on April 16th. This young man has the worst luck with injuries. He's been hitting off a tee, playing catch, jogging on an anti-gravity treadmill. Listen, Bird has said that he hopes to be playing before September. Aaron Boone, he described him as still being in a rehab process of his recovery, saying he's not close to getting on the field or ready for game situations? Could that be the beginning and the end for Greg Bird? Now let's talk about the million-dollar man who's making millions of dollars and hasn't played for the New York Yankees in, what, 2 years? And I'm talking about Jacoby Ellsbury. He hasn't played in a major league game since October 2017 due to a series of injuries. And the most prominent was arthroscopic surgery to repair his left hip labrum last August. How the hell are you hurt yourself and you're not playing? I wouldn't expect him to join a team this year. I wouldn't expect him to join a team next year. The Yankees just might as well send him home, man. I don't think they could get anything for somebody that's not playing. Let's talk about Edwin Encarnacion. He sustained a right wrist fracture when he was hit by a slider from Red Sox reliever Josh Smith on August 3rd. And the Yankees said Encarnacion will remain in New York and will be reevaluated by doctors in 7 to 10 days with the further rehab timeline for that evaluation. It just happened to Aaron Judge. It took Aaron Judge a month. So if all goes well with Encarnacion, he's looking to be back in the Yankees lineup in September. They're going to need his bat. All right, David Hell, he's a relief pitcher for the New York Yankees. His return is expected in August as he was diagnosed with a lumbar spine strain after an appearance on July 26th against the Boston Red Sox. And his injury list was dated back to July 28th, and Boone was saying that he's hopeful that Hell's injury would be short-term. He threw 30 pitches in the bullpen on August 8th. Aaron Hicks, he injured his right elbow making a throw from the outfield to third base in game 2 of a doubleheader. And he said that he felt pain in the elbow and reported it later to head athletic trainer Steve Donahue, exiting for a pinch hitter in the 8th inning. And it was placed on a 10-day injury list the next day with the right flexor strain. Listen, you start getting into trouble with that elbow, that's not a good sign. Not a good sign. Then you have Jonathan Holder, who's expected back in late August, September. He was on the list. He was on the injured list with right shoulder inflammation. Going to be big for the Yankees bullpen. Jonathan Loaisiga, he's close to being back with the team. He's on a rehab assignment right about now. And he had a rotator cuff strain. The Yankees don't plan on using him as a starter. They're gonna use him in a bullpen. CeCe Sabathia is expected in August. He played catch recently and is scheduled to throw from the bullpen on August 11th. Second right knee related timeout of the season for him. He's had injections and, you know, this is the end. This is his last year. The body starts to break down. He's a heavy man. It's a lot of weight to carry around. And last but not least, listeners, two more players. Let's talk about Luis Severino. He's expected to return late August, September. He threw 23 pitches from the bullpen mound on August 9th. With hopes of helping the Yankees either as a starter or reliever for their postseason push. This young man's next steps will be more bullpens and eventually batting practice and a stem of rehab games. Initially sidelined with the right rotator cuff inflammation in March. And then it was revealed that a grade 2 strain on his right. I don't even know what the hell this muscle is. Latissimus muscle. Jesus Christ. Try saying that 10 times. Last but not least, Giancarlo Stanton sprained his right kneecap ligament on a slide in the third base on June 25th. For somebody that lifts weights as much as he does, how in the hell is his recovery process so slow? And he's just now starting to regain motion and has been able to resume running and hitting off a tee. Hopefully, he'll be back in September. They need that. Listen, the Yankees are winning baseball games. Will these guys come back and kill the chemistry of what's going on right now? And Luke Voigt was diagnosed with a sports turner. I can't forget Luke Voigt. And he left the game on July 30th. And the Yankees, listen, this is a lot of damn injuries. Abdomen strains. Gleyber Torres just came back from the injured list. He had a cortisone injection and is hoping to avoid surgery. And that's expected to keep him out for at least 6 weeks. And as for us, DJ LeMahieu to have to play first base. Yankees brought up Mike Ford, who's playing first base. These guys are still getting it done. I was down in Baltimore visiting my family. And, you know, I always wanted to go see a Baltimore Orioles game. So hopefully, I got to check the schedule. Hopefully, the Yankees and the Orioles are locking up one more time, as the Yankees just absolutely destroyed the Orioles in a three-game set at Camden Yards. And the Yankees, these are the teams they have to beat up on. And that's what they've been doing for the most part. They've been beating up on teams that they need to beat up on. But boy, do I feel bad for the Orioles. Man, that's an organization going nowhere fast. And I heard there was reports that Chris Davis got into it with the manager of the Baltimore Orioles in the dugout. Probably one of the worst contracts given out to a professional athlete in sports history. Paying him a lot of money, and they can't get rid of him. See what happens. A lot to cover. That's going to bring us to a close of this week's show, listeners. I hope you enjoy listening to my voice. I hope you enjoyed the knowledge that I dished out to you guys today, as I appreciate you in many ways. Thanks for the support. I want to thank our producer, Ayo Omar Baker, for the support. And listeners, we can't do this without you, so please continue to support us. Please spread the word to all sports fans that you think might enjoy the show. Let's keep the train rolling, listeners. Have a safe and blessed week. And I'll see you in 7 days, and also Mad Mike in 7 days. So, Ayo! Let's roll, baby!
Big Brother Lloyd, another great show as always. You know me, I'm always interested in the behind-the-scenes stuff, so the new NCAA rules as regards to the agents. What I actually think is going to happen, you're going to see companies like Roc Nation start to roll out scholarship programs and mentorship programs to get the kids that want to be agents through that four-year course, probably partially, if not completely, on the dime of companies like Roc Nation. So there's going to be a way around it to get the kids that aren't going to be able to pay for it out of pocket into those jobs, working for those companies, and going down to recruit some of those new players that are coming into the NBA specifically and across all sports. That's what I think is going to happen anyway. But as always, a great show. Looking forward to Mad Mike coming back next week. For all those that listen and all those that subscribe, thank you very much. For those who may be listening to this show for the first time, you can subscribe everywhere that podcasts are available, including Spotify and Apple Podcasts. You can head over to LloydAThompson.com with any questions you may have. And you can follow at Lloyd A. Thompson on Instagram and on Twitter. Once again, brand new episodes of the Lloyd A. Thompson, the Mad Mike Sports Show, drop every single Monday. Make sure you subscribe. You don't want to miss a damn thing. Catch y'all in 7 days. Peace.